Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. My next guest comes all the way down from Down Under from Australia. And she was diagnosed with epilepsy early on and then later on ADHD and then had four kids of her own, all on the autism spectrum. Meanwhile, in her daily life, she helps those who are autistic as well. So sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage and let's learn more about her. See you there.
I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own. Follow what the group is thinking, bottle up my intuition till it's popping out the box that I don't fit in. I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today I'm joined with Ashley Beasley. Welcome to the show, Ashley.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Okay, so I'm a mum of four. I live in Australia. And four of my children are all on the spectrum. I personally was diagnosed at a very young age with epilepsy and ADHD. So I've been on that journey my whole life, and then to then have four children on the spectrum, it's very new. And really learning about how all of that works. And I also, in my daily role, when my kids are at school, I actually go and look after people that have autism.
All right. So when were you first diagnosed with ADHD?
When was I diagnosed with ADHD? I was about 8 when that diagnosis came in. Yeah.
Now, do you feel you might be AUDHD considering your kids are also neurodivergent?
Now, I have had this thought come across my mind a few times. Now, given that I have the epilepsy, that is a common thing with girls with autism, that they can have the seizures on top. So, yes, that has been a thought that has crossed my mind. And then looking back at my own childhood, I remember like loud noises and stuff like that, that my mum, like we used to have fireworks here, that like we'd go and see a fireworks show. And every time my parents would have to take the earmuffs, you know, because I couldn't handle the sounds. And we also used to have like marches through like the center of our town. And I would also have to have earmuffs for that. So quite possibly, I could have been on the spectrum, but I haven't had the testing to know.
All right. Do you plan to get the testing sometime?
I don't really know because if I look at it, I don't know if it would make much of a difference. But also, my partner, I believe that he is really on the spectrum. He's got a lot of different things that come up that I'm like, wow, maybe that's where it come from. Maybe the kids were bound to have it. I don't know.
All right. Now, before you got diagnosed with ADHD, did you feel that you were different from the rest of the world?
I've felt that my whole life. Very early on in the piece, I was a hairdresser, and it was a very nasty sort of industry. Like, you know, you had to be in a clique, or you had to, you know, always know people's drama. And I was always like, that's not me. Like, each time, like, and it, throughout my whole life, that has come up where I'm like, I'm not a nasty person. Like, I'm a person of service. So, you know, I'm always giving, always wear my heart on my sleeve type of thing. And yeah, it just was not me. And throughout my life, that has come up where I'm just like, yeah, I'm not the same as you. Like, and I've always looked for someone that's very much the same as me, and I've never found it.
All right. Now, you had mentioned that you have an aversion to sound. Do you have any other sensory issues, like, or even hypersensitivities to things like smell or taste or even hearing?
Yeah, I do. So food textures, stuff like jelly is a no. There's different foods that I do have sensories to that I'm just like never eaten that. Clothing when it's wet, that's also another thing for me that I'm like I just can't do it. Yeah, so there is some sensories there that kind of make me think, well, am I,
All right. When you got your diagnosis, did you feel like everything in the past all of a sudden just started to make sense to you?
I don't really know because I was really young when I had my diagnosis. So I guess I've just lived with the label, so to speak. I guess now as an adult, I understand why I do the things I do. But I've also known that a lot of people don't understand neurodiversity. And it's like that is something that needs to be taught. And a lot of the time, I'm teaching other people, like, we don't think the same as that. Like, because neurotypical, they think a lot differently. The best way I can explain it is they look at a task very head on, whereas neurodiverse look at every other option outside the box and will get it done that way. So I'm often teaching that.
I mean, I've heard that before, that where the neurotypicals look at a situation head on, and that's how they tackle it. But where those of us who are neurodiverse, we're more, let's look at the big picture, and this is why we're so good at everything, is because we just don't focus on one thing. We look at the big picture and see what other options are out there to solve this one problem.
Yeah, there's never we put a blanket over the whole lot and go, okay, well, if it doesn't work this way, let's try it this way. Whereas they're always just thinking straight on at the task, and it's like, yeah, sometimes I'm like, why did you not think of it this way?
Now, do you have any hyper focuses?
Oh yes. When it comes to my business, I'm very hyper focused on particular things. Spreading the awareness about autism, that is a super hyper focus for me. Like people need to understand this because even in our education systems over here, the teachers just don't get it. Like all of our ones that are trained in special needs get all of the training with like Autism Hub and Autism Queensland and Autism Australia and wherever else. But our actual teaching staff, the ones that are teaching our children on a daily basis, are not getting the training. And it's like, why are they not getting the training? Do you know what I mean? Like, we've still got a long way to go, in that area.
I know when I talked with the South Australia's Assistant Minister of Autism, she said that the I think she said you have like three colleges out there, and that those three colleges now have a program that if you want to teach those who are autistic, you have to go through this program first before you graduate.
Yeah, well, what they're kind of doing over here with our teaching staff is they only actually have to do 6 months in special needs, and then they can say to parents like me, oh, well, we've worked in special needs. But that's not good enough. Do you know what I mean? Like,
No.
it's
Yeah.
to get to know everything about, any type of disability, really. You need a lot longer than 6 months.
I mean, what they don't understand is when they say people with disabilities, that's a broad spectrum of an umbrella of things to cover. when you say neurodiverse, even, it's so many different disabilities. That doesn't mean you're specialized. You know what how to deal with a person who's autistic, who have or has ADHD. It just means you have a broad spectrum of coverage. There is a way you need to deal with those of us who are autistic, especially when it comes down to things like how to teach us how to read a child, how to know if they're either a visual thinker or a physical thinker. How to handle meltdowns. These are things these teachers need to know.
Exactly. I know that there has been a push in the past over here for neurodiverse learning, like so actually a facility where they can go and learn in a neurodiverse way. But that's sort of gone a bit stagnant in like the last 6 months. But there has been a push for that. Which I think that is, it's a great idea, but it's a matter of our governments getting on board for that.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, a lot of go there are a lot of countries out there who struggle with trying to get on board with pushing the right agendas for helping teach those how to deal with autism. It just seems to be a common fight.
It is. It so is. And like, there has been many a times, like each year, you have to go and you have to explain to the teacher all over again what you explained to the teacher the year before because none of them know. And then I'm the one that then has to give strategies and all the rest of it, which I'm happy to do. But really, there should be a bigger person that pays for this to have all of them learn.
Now, you mentioned your company. Tell me about your company and what made you start it.
So I work in disability. So over here, like we have something called NDIS, which that supports, it's a funding scheme from our government that helps people with disabilities. So I work under that with my own business, and we go in and we help them if it's anything from daily living tasks, so like being a support worker, maybe it's driving them to appointments. There's a whole array of things. There's even something called SIL, which is a assisted living home, like a home that they live in, and they have 24-hour care. We've got everything from cleaners to general maintenance, like so mowing the yards, all of that sort of thing. And that's what I do in my own business. And then I've also got a parenting program where we teach parents how to deal with their children, with meltdowns and strategies to put in place and all of these things, because there is a lot of parents struggling and they are told that they're not allowed certain help and all of these things. And quite often parents will believe that that's it, you know, that's the line in the sand. I'm not allowed to get this support or that support. And it's really about advocating for that because they are allowed it. It's a matter of how much you want to fight for it.
And what was that initial push that made you want to start this company?
So my initial push was with my own children. Obviously, they are on the spectrum. And time again, I got told from teachers that, you know, they couldn't support my children. I got told from NDIS that they wouldn't help my kids. And each time I got that pushback, it gave me the drive even more to, you know, help another person because when you've been on that fight and that journey, that is massive, you know. And if you can help another person with the same thing and give some sort of difference, that's my job done. So that's kind of where it all came from. because I was like, no, something more has to be done, and there has to be someone out there that's willing to help other people.
Now, in your education system, do you guys have what we here in the US call an IEP for your child, which is I believe it's an individual education program?
Yes, so we call it ICP over here too. Is that what you just called it?
IEP.
No, so we call it ICP,
Okay.
which is, yeah, it's an individual curriculum over here. We do have that. Personally, I have my son that's in year 3 on it. And he's on year one curriculum when he's actually in year 3. So he's been on ICP for, I want to say, since year one. And I don't see him getting off of that anytime soon. But yeah, we do have those programs in our schools.
Now, you said that earlier that all four of your kids are autistic. What are some of the struggles you have raising them?
Oh, I guess my biggest thing is that I have hardly any support. That'd probably have to be the biggest struggle, that I pretty much do it on my own. The other struggle that I had early on with my son was the behavior, like, all the way through, it's been the behavior that's come up, and it's like, you can't do that, mate. It's not appropriate or whatever it might be. And he did have the anger early on, which was very confronting because it was like, he would go and pull knives out the drawer, and it was like, where has this come from? He's never seen something like this. But, that was just the behavior that he was displaying. So that's always been a challenge. And then the other challenge is when they have the behavior that you get the phone call from the school because they have no idea what's going on, or they don't understand it. And then, you're back at square one because then you're in tears and you're like, they just don't understand it. So I guess that that's probably been my biggest challenge.
Now, what are some of the joys of raising them?
I say this to every parent that has a child that's neurodiverse, is that you've got to take the little wins, like something that you might have been working on for like 12 months, and it finally, the penny drops, and you're kind of like, yay, they've finally learnt it. But also looking at like the little things as well, like just the knowledge that comes out of them and the way that they look at life, that's something special.
Now, do any of your kids have ADHD as well?
Yes. So I have two with ADHD, and they all have ID as well, so intellectual disability. So there's been a bit of a weird thing over here with that it's a very old rule where they reckon that you can't have autism and intellectual disability, but that has since been deleted, that you can actually have both. So yeah, sometimes it's about getting the doctors on board too, because it's like, these things are going on, so what are you going to do about it?
Now, what are some of the hurdles you are facing raising your kids?
The hurdles. Wow. I think like maybe going through the schooling, that's probably the biggest hurdle. The high school, that's completely different, 'cause I'm like, wow. I guess we just don't realize how many people are really bullying, I guess, in some ways, that it's just like, wow, like, where do we change that? That's probably the biggest hurdle when they get to high school.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot where parents, they see one thing when their kids go into grammar school, and it's easier because there aren't cliques and there aren't clubs and everything like that. But the minute you go into high school, it's a whole other ball game, and the parents are worried of like, how are my children going to be rejected? Are they going to make friends? Are they going to keep some of their older friends? Are the teachers going to respect them or help them? Have you had a chance to talk with? Do you plan to talk with the teachers in the high school when your kids get into high school?
Yes, yeah, so
And
I am. I have spoken to them. Like, we have a great teacher over at the high school that works in the disability part, and he is amazing. He's done a lot of things for my oldest daughter. And they're actually asking me to go there next year and run a mentor program, a mentorship program where we actually work with the kids with neurodiversities and their families. To fix some of the issues, because a lot of them are having, like people bullying them, and how do we deal with that, and all of those sorts of things. So we're putting in a mentorship program hopefully next year over at the high school for that.
let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, bullying seems to be one of the key points in fears of parents when their child enters high school. How do you handle that with your kids?
How do I handle it? Well, I guess my kids, I've always been, like, I instill in my kids that, there could be something going on in their own home, and the way that they're raised might be completely different to the way that you have been. And the learning and understanding around what disability means is completely different for them, because maybe their parents don't even understand. And that's where they've got the opinion from. That's quite often what I've seen. I've always sort of tried to teach my kids that maybe they're not having the best day, so maybe they're taking it out on you, kind of ignore them, report it if you need to, and then, take further steps if needed. So that's kind of how we handle it. If you ask my partner, on the other hand, he would probably be like, just get physical. But I'm like, no, we can't do that. There's a fine line there that we kind of go by.
All right. Now let's talk a little bit about your kids. Have they found their special interests yet?
Yes. So my youngest, that he's ASD only at this point in time, he loves fishing. Just that's his hyper focus. He's fishing, fishing, fishing. Every other conversation you have with him, it's got to be about fishing. Even the way that they, so we've got something over here at the moment before they start school that's called ECDP, which is pretty much, so this is a very new thing over here, but what we're trying to do is transition all the neurodiverse kids into school a year before they're meant to go. So then we have better, like, so they can, I guess, ease into school a lot better. There's no meltdowns first day. They're very used to it by that point. So they go one day a week into school, a year before they're meant to start. So he's been doing that, and the way that they've been teaching him is just amazing. Like, they know what his interest is, so they'll teach him to count with fish, or they will go, oh, well, fish and chips. So this is the thing that they've been doing, where they will pretend that he's the cook, and he's got to cook some fish and chips for people, and then he's got to yell out a number, which it's great to see. So they really, really focus on his interests, which is awesome. My other boy, has always been a fishing fanatic as well, but he can identify fish in America versus fish in Australia that is pretty much the same fish. And it's like, wow, like that's something that I would have never have thought of, but he can do it. My oldest girls, they don't really have Pacific interests, which is quite weird. Like they've never had, like a fixation on, like a cartoon or anything like that either, which is, it's been hard in that way that they haven't got this particular thing that they really like. Yeah.
Now, with ADHD, do you and your kids deal with like running thoughts, like constant thoughts popping into your head, and how do you deal with it?
So my that's what I was this has been a subject in my house for the last few weeks. So I am constantly thinking about everything else other than the actual the most important things, which is like my brain is always going, oh, that's a great idea, or this is a great idea, or I've got to do that. And then you forget the most important thing sometimes, which it can frustrate other people, but it's like, well, that's just how my brain works. So you quite often, I have to write notes to remember, certain things I have to do throughout the day. My kids, they are very much, you've got to give them one instruction for them to do one instruction. You can't like go, oh, well, here's three things I need you to go, put out the washing. I need you to feed the dogs and I need you to clean the kitchen. You can't do that for them because they won't remember any of them. It's like the working memory is, well, with ADHD, working memory is not great anyway. So simple one-step instructions is how we have to work it. We do a lot of things like up on the walls, like, for different routines. So say it's like you go to the toilet, at the sink it will say wash your hands, because something as simple as that, they are not thinking about that. Does that make sense? So
Yeah, when you get one thing, you don't think about the other unless you're reminded about it. And I'm pretty familiar with that because my mom is always saying, "I have to tell you a million times and do one thing." And there have been times where somebody will give me a whole slew of things, and I'll be just in la la. My mind will be in la la land. I'm like, "Yeah," and then everything just goes in one ear and out the other.
yes, I'm quite often dealing with that. So it's just easier to have like on their walls in their room, they've got like morning and afternoon routine. So the things that are expected of them with like a tick and flick kind of thing. Yeah, so just those sorts of things, they really help in certain ways. Yeah. We've got everything from bathroom routine to whatever. It's all in there. Like, so they've just got to like kind of go, oh, that's what I've got to do next to stay on task.
Now, let's go back for a minute. You had mentioned that your kids had a one of your kids went through an early program to before they to get them ready for school. I am kind of familiar with that, but in college terms, when I was sent away, when my parents sent me to college right out of high school, the college I went to had a program for those who were disabled, who had ADHD and other disabilities at the time. We knew nothing about autism. And you went through a summer program just to get you acquainted. So I'm pretty, it's probably what your son went through, just to get him acquainted with the classes, the professors, the teachers, what the atmosphere feels like. And that is a great thing because especially in their early years, you want to prep them for what high school is going to feel like come fall semester or spring, because it's going to be busy, busy, busy.
Yeah, so High school is the equivalent to your college, I think, is what we would call it. And primary is probably, I don't know what you would call.
Primary for us would be grammar. Middle school would probably for you would for us is probably your high school, and then college is university.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, that's right. So for us, we do a transition, like for children with neurodiversities now, it's a very new thing, but we do it from before they go into like primary. So that's a thing now where we will transition them the year before and they go one day a week for 4 terms. And then we also have a program that runs in between that. So from we've got year six that ends our primary school year now, and then year seven would be our high school. So we have a transition in that as well, where they go and they experience that. But not for university, they don't really do something like that.
All right. Now, what advice do you have for those who are raising neurodiverse children?
My biggest advice is never take no as an answer when it comes to advocacy. And my other thing would be is just celebrate the small moments of, the things that you've been working on for a long time and they finally get it. Definitely celebrate those, and make those like a big moment, a big milestone.
All right, and finally, where can people find out more about you on the web and learn more about your company?
So I've got a Facebook page. I'm currently trying to get the website up and going. But yeah, you can find me on there under Absolute Ability Support Services, or even on my main page, you can follow me.
All right, and that's it, everybody. I'm Reed Miles. That was Ashley Beasley, and I'll see you in the next one. Thank you, Ashley.
Thanks.